Samantha.
Samantha, we're going to be starting in about 10 minutes.
Okay, thank you.
Hello?
Hello, Hannah.
How are you?
I'm sorry I'm late. We had company and I have someone else coming in, so I'm going to have to mute. They're not going to stay. They're just picking up something. And I'll be back. Okay, I'll be back as soon as I can.
Okay, so you're muting it?
Yes, I'm going to mute.
You're going to leave it connected, though, right?
Yes, I'm going to leave it connected. This person is just coming to pick up something, so, and she doesn't live. So I should be back, I think, within 5 to 10 minutes.
Okay. Please join me in saying the Anabakoa. Anabakoa, Gedula Chimincha, Tati, Serira, Alapakimu Yutta, Sadi, Kabel Rinat, Amcha Sagvenu, Tahareinu, Nora, Kufre Shayan, Sintet Nun, Nagibor, Dor Shehuncha, Kivavat, Shamrem, Nun Gimel Dalet, Yud Kaf Shin, the letters of the month of Cheshvan, the Dalet that created the planet Ma'adim, the planet Mars, and the Nun that created the constellation Akrav, the astrological sign of Scorpio. Together, the Dalet and the Nun spell the Hebrew word Din, which means judgment. Barchem tacharem rachame sitkatcha tamid gamle betetresh saditav kimmel chasim kadosh berov tuvcha nael adata het kuf bet tet dunayon Yachid Geye, Lamcha Pene, Zokre Kiddushata, Yud Gimel Lamed, Pei Zayin Kuf. Shavatenu Kabel, Ushma Tziakatenu, Yodea, Talumot, Shin Kufav, Zadi Yutah. The first letters of the verse that connects to the year 5777 can be parsed into three Hebrew words, tzatz, ki, yach, and it translates as view as brothers, and it's teaching us to remember to act like brothers until we actually feel like brothers. And now I'm going to read from the Zohar, a verse from the Parashah of Noah. I'm reading from verse 157. L'shem yichud kutzav yichu yitev yidhilu urchimu udhilu udhilu urchimu liakta shem yudhe bavadhe v'yichuda shalim b'shem kol Yisrael limud Torah mitzvah la'asok Torah mitzvah v'alvina v'nayel v'yadim v'mole n'mase yadim v'nehu v'yabi yudhah v'ashakiyah Kameya to Rabbi Shimon Vechalo Aske Bechai Kira Dikti Vaira Pe Et Mizbach Hashem Pecharus Mai Vyaraya Pe Tahate Bime Eliyahu Yisrael Kalho Shavkuleya Vekucha Barichu Vishavku Barit Kayama Dilchon Kadata Eliyahu Bechama Tika Shavku Bene Yisrael Hai Barit Kayama Avaru Minaihu Hai Barit. Rabbi Yehuda was sitting with the four Rabbi Shimon, and both were studying the text in which it is written, and he repaired the altar of Hashem that was broken down. What is the meaning of the term repaired in this verse? Come and see. In the days of Eliyahu, all Israel left the Holy One, blessed be he, and in so doing left their holy covenant. And when Eliyahu came and saw that the sons of Israel had left the Holy Covenant, and therefore it had been taken away from them, he amended it and brought it back to its place. That is, he amended Yesod, making it worthy of mating with Malchut. And this is considered to be the repair of the altar, which is Malchut, as shall be further explained. Any questions?
What period is your book in the Bible, Israel?
It's from the First Kings, so it's talking about the time that Eliyahu lived in the physical world. It's talking about after King David, and I believe after King Solomon as well.
So there was some corruption going on, and
yes,
to be repaired.
Throughout the stories of the judges and the kings, the people went through periods where they became idol worshippers and other periods where they turned back to Hashem, just like we do today and just like people do today. So that's the period that this verse is referring to. But it's talking about a similar discussion of when Noah came out of the ark, and he built an altar and sacrificed to God and became drunk. He grew vines, he became drunk, and then the father of his son Ham was the one. He saw his father drunk, and the Torah doesn't say this explicitly, the Midrash does. He basically castrated his father because he did not want to have a fourth child and give up.
Oh.
Because the three sons were going to inherit a third of the world. He didn't want to inherit a fourth of the world, so he didn't want his father to have more sons. So that was the...
That was actually what was saved.
Right.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, two of his sons came in and covered his nakedness and brought him out.
It didn't say that Ham had
yeah,
done
I said
that.
It doesn't explicitly say it in the Torah, but the Midrash is very clear. Actually, there's some hints in other Midrashim.
Ham, and who is the other brother?
Yafet is the nations of Europe.
Okay.
Where Jews are sheltered sometimes.
Okay.
And
Ham became the African nations. African nations. And Shem?
Shem is Abraham's.
Oh, that's us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Both us and Edom, Rome and us. So there's a mixture in Europe.
Rome?
So Yafet is also considered the Oriental, the Eastern nations as well.
Shem is became the Hebrew nation,
right.
The Israelites.
So tonight's class is Advanced Reincarnation, and you can find the handout on the Revealed Wisdom Matrix, row 11, second column from the left, Advanced Reincarnation Series. When you open that up, we're going to start. It's class number 4. It's class number 4. But then you'll have to scroll down to section 11, chapter 1, section 11, which we did last week. But it's a little confusing, and so I had said at that time that we would redo that section before we move on, because it was a little confusing. So let's understand the background of what this section is. As it says, or as we will read, this is talking about the nefesh of the ger. And the Hebrew word ger translates as convert. It also translates as stranger. And that concept of the soul of the convert, or the soul of the stranger, that's what the term nefesh of the ger means. That concept is a little difficult when you talk about it in reincarnation, because a soul incarnates the first time. It corrects its nefesh, but it does not complete the correction of the ruach or the neshama. So it has to reincarnate again. But there's a spiritual law that says it cannot come back with its corrected nefesh. It has to come back with the nefesh of a ger.
A ger, a stranger?
Either you can call it a stranger or you can call it a convert.
Oh.
And so that's what this section is trying to stress and bring in that concept before it's really ready. The translator thought it was appropriate to bring it in here, but the Ari and the Chaim Vital, when they wrote the books, didn't bring it into at this point. And that's why it's so difficult and why we need to go over it again. Does anybody have any questions before I start? Okay, so it's chapter 1, section 11, titled The Nefesh of the Ger. The concept of the nefesh of the ger, which can be either convert or stranger, will be mentioned several times throughout the Sefer Sha'ar HaGilgulim, the gate of wheels, the gate of reincarnation. It will be worthwhile to examine it now in greater detail than just mentioning it as we did in section 10. We have already learned from the Ari several important rules. Firstly, a ruach cannot come into the world until the nefesh is completely rectified, and the neshama cannot come into the world until the ruach is completely rectified. Secondly, when the ruach comes into the world, it must come ensconced within a nefesh. Ensconced means within. The ruach is higher than the nefesh. And in the visualization, the ruach is inside of the nefesh. Maybe not all of the ruach, because the nefesh can go up and down relative to the 10 sephirot of the ruach. But as you visualize the two cylinders, the nefesh is outside of the ruach, and inside the ruach is the neshama. However, if the ruach or the neshama were already in the world together with the nefesh, and they were blemished by sin, then the ruach must be rectified after completion of the nefesh. And then a blemished ruach cannot enter the world ensconced within a rectified nefesh. Is that clear, or is that confusing at this point?
A little confusing.
You have a nefesh. It's rectified. A ruach comes in.
Uh-huh.
Now the person dies. He has to be reincarnated. So his ruach comes in with a nefesh of a ger. He connects and rectifies his ruach. Then he reaches a neshama, but he dies before it's completed. But in the course of rectifying his neshama, he does a sin that causes his ruach to become blemished. Now, that combination of ruach and neshama has to reincarnate together. And the neshama needs to be completed, and the ruach needs to be fixed, whatever was blemished. They cannot come in the nefesh of a ger that wasn't blemished. The nefesh of the ger is rectified, it's complete. So he has to come into a nefesh of a ger who has also been blemished. But he can't come in with the same nefesh of the ger from last lifetime. It's a different nefesh of the ger. That's what's being expressed here. I hope that was clear. The rectified nefesh cannot become a vehicle or external garment to a blemished ruach. In other words, the nefesh has to be blemished, the ruach has to be blemished, and the neshama has not been completed. That is, would be the third incarnation. Yet the ruach and the neshama cannot enter into the world without the intermediary of a nefesh. So there has to be a nefesh there, but it can't be a rectified nefesh if there's a blemished ruach. So the question that's being asked is, how can the ruach and the neshama ever come into the world to achieve rectification? That's what this we need to try and understand. And the answer to this conundrum is the concept of the nefesh of the ger. The ruach of neshama grabs hold of the nefesh of a ger, encloses itself within that nefesh, and in this way it enters into the world with the nefesh of a ger serving as its intermediary or its interface. In addition, there are several points that need to be known to understand this concept of the nefesh of the ger. Firstly, when the nefesh joins with a ruach or a neshama, it has already been in the world. Because how can it become rectified if it hadn't been in the world? The convert has already done what was necessary to merit for it to become fixed and corrected. Secondly, the RE will explain in later chapters that there are three basic types of soul, there are new souls, somewhat new souls, which are descended from Cain and Abel.
Cain and Abel?
Cain and Abel, but Abel in English.
Okay.
And old souls. The Nefesh of the Ger is a fourth type. The following are the relevant words of the Ari at the end of chapter 7 of the Sefer HaGilgulim. So we're still in chapter 1. We haven't completed chapter 1. And we're being taught things from chapter 7. So you can imagine there's a lot of things in the middle that are not yet been revealed to you. There are other nefeshot, plural forms of, plural form of the Hebrew word nefesh. There are other nefeshot of converts that fall out from the klipa of Noga, which is composed of good and evil, as mentioned in Parasha Vayakhel. They are from the marital intercourse of the souls of the tzaddikim that take place every night in the early garden of paradise, as mentioned in Beshalach. The divisions of the souls of Israelites, however, are three. They are new souls, intermediate souls, which are the souls coming from Cain and Abel, and old ones, which fell from Adam HaRishon when he sinned. They fell into the klipot. Adam sinned. Souls fell, became part of Cain and Abel.
Right.
They sinned.
Yeah. When he killed his brother.
And actually, you have to remember, in Kabbalah, nobody dies without a reason. So Abel also sinned. But let's not go into that. It'll digress. So Cain and Abel, the souls in them sinned. And so they fell further. Where did they fall to? They fell into the klipot, into the negative system. Now, how do you escape from the negative system? How do the souls escape? They first must come out as a ruach in order to correct that level first. Excuse me, my mistake. They first must come out as a nefesh in order to correct that level first. That's what's being described. They come out in a reincarnation. They correct themselves. But who are they being incarnated into? They're being incarnated into the 70 nations.
Noah and Lech. Okay.
So now they've corrected themselves. But the souls, the ruach, cannot come into the world without having a nefesh. And since the ruach is not corrected, it has to come in with a nefesh from a ger, because that's a lower level of consciousness. It's a lower level that has been stained. And so it's corrected itself, but it hasn't fully corrected itself. It has to grow to a higher level, because if you remember our classes on You Are Who You Hate, what that means is souls exchange parts. And because the parts are not at home with each other, they cause people to argue and to be in conflict with each other in order to do the right thing, which is to get the proper soul part back to the proper home. So I'm bringing in a different idea, but an idea that it's helpful to understand this nefesh of the ger. And unfortunately, the translator didn't go into that, because he's really not aware of it, because it's taught in a different area of the children of Israel. From the Baal Shem Tov as opposed to the Ari.
This is going on in Noah with all the children and the generations who become the 70 nations.
Yes, correct.
With Noah was a monotheist, wasn't he?
Yes. Yes, Noah was the grandson, the 10th generation from Adam, and the grandson of Hanoch ben Yared. So, yes, he was a monotheist.
But he did he know he was Jewish?
Well,
an Israelite or no?
He knew that everybody else in the world was an idol worshiper. That's what he knew.
Oh, okay. Of course.
When it said that the souls fell, does it also mean divide? Like, because there's soul division?
No. No. When a soul, when we speak of a soul falling into the klipot, think of the hierarchy of a set of stairs. You take the first step, you take the second step, you take the third step. Then you sin, you fall back to the second step. You sin some more, you fall back to the first step. On the first step, you have shells, klipot, who are able to handle the light at the first step, but not the second step. So when a soul falls back to the first step, the klipot grab hold of it, and they encapsulate it because they don't want to let it go. And then according to the Zohar, what happens, eventually that soul, the negative system feels so strongly that this soul will never betray it, that it lets it reincarnate into the world to attract other souls to fall.
To the negative system.
Correct.
So when Adam was created, there was one soul only.
No, when Adam was created, there were 613 parts of his soul. And each of those parts had 72 potential nations. And each of those parts had 613 potential components of themselves. And each of those 613 potential components has up to 600,000 potential sparks of that soul. I know it's confusing, and it will remain confusing until we get further into it.
It's just that when we talk about that, the reason why there are more and more people in the world is because there's no correction, so the soul divides.
Correct.
More and more. So at what process in this falling this divide?
When a soul part, as I'm describing it, one of the 613 parts of a person's soul, in that lifetime, none of those parts were corrected even a little bit. Three times in a row, they reincarnate three times, and they're not corrected. That's when they split.
And then every soul, or every piece of soul has 613 parts in it?
Yes. Potentially. In other words, in you, there's 613 parts. But in each of those parts, there's a potential 613 components.
Mm-hmm.
So a way to understand that, you have an eye. It's one of the 613 parts.
Yep.
Your eye has 613 levels or components. Science only has recognized 20 of those parts. An idea, you have a lens, you have a cornea,
right.
You have a pupil, you have a muscle, you have the white,
uh-huh.
You have eyebrows, you have eyelashes. All of these are components of the eye. That's why I said science has only mentioned 20. There's 613.
For each eye.
For each eye. So you begin to get a fuller sense of why reincarnation takes 200 classes. Okay. Thirdly, we will learn that it is possible for a blemished ruach, whose nefesh has been completed, to enter into the body of a person, a stranger, but not necessarily a convert, who himself possesses an unfinished nefesh. And this is called double gilgul, double reincarnation. Those that want to examine this concept more extensively can read the translation and explanation of the relevant section of the Zohar in note 10. And then we're going into note 10, which comes from the Parasha of Mishpatim and the Zohar explaining that. If he takes a different wife, is a verse from the Parasha of Mishpatim. Because Mishpatim starts out with this Hebrew slave, which is describing reincarnation. If he takes a different wife, then he goes out with his wife. He doesn't go out with his wife. That's the simple story, but it's talking about reincarnation. And that's what we're going to start to explain. If the Hebrew slave gets married to a different wife. Let us consider the words of the Saba, the grandfather, as they appear in the Zohar in the Mishpatim. The post-biblical source of the concept Nefesh of the Ger. The relevant section of the Zohar is actually an exposition on the verse. If he takes a different wife, it concerns a Jewish girl who is sold by her father when she is still a minor. She is called an Ama Ivriyah, a Jewish maidservant. The Torah requires the person who bought that maidservant to marry her, or to marry her to one of his sons. If he does not do this by the time she becomes an adult, 12 years of age, then he gives her gifts and she goes out free. If he or one of his sons do marry her, then she is entitled to receive the love and respect due to every Jewish wife, which is defined by the three categories: her food, her clothing, and her qualitative time of intimacy. Even if he takes a different wife, he can never deny this girl her privileges, fully and without prejudice. However, the Zohar is considering this situation from an esoteric point of view. That's the translator's comment. It's actually not an esoteric. It's in addition to the literal level, there's an esoteric point of view as well. And that's what my comment explains. Now, any questions up till now? Okay. Now, in the Zohar and the Sulam commentary, in the Mishpatim, there's a Pasuk 88. All of these souls of converts flew out from the Garden of Paradise in a hidden way. In other words, these souls were not born to holy seed. Normally, souls come from the higher Garden of Paradise into this world by passing through the lower garden, and then through the holy seed into the world. But these did not come down in a normal way. Suddenly, they appeared far away, and somehow they made their way back. Their path is referred to as hidden. We're talking about souls that fell into the Klipot, and then the Klipot allows them to reincarnate, because the negative system is sure they will never disturb, they will never cause them. They will be, the negative system thinks they will attract other souls to the negative system. But in fact, this is the way Hashem fools the negative system, because those souls have the ability to choose to betray the negative system. They're in a world of free choice. And that's what's being described here. When they leave this world, the souls that they gained, the converts from the Garden of Paradise, to what place do they return is the question that's being asked. Notice that these souls were already in the world. The converts, through their deeds, have earned them. The question here is, how do they get back to their place in the higher Garden of Paradise? And where are they in the meantime? If they had come out in a normal and known way, from the higher Garden of Eden to the lower Garden of Eden, through Yesod, through the seed, the holy seed, whatever that is, which is spiritual people, basically, if they had come through the normal way, then they could transverse that path in reverse to get back to paradise. However, these souls that came out in a hidden way from the negative system, how do they get back? Their way back is hidden. And if they cannot get back, then where are they? That's verse 88. Now, verse 89. We were taught that the first person to grab and take hold of the property of a convert merits to it. Now, that's a physical law talking about inheritance. There are two rules in the halakha that are relevant to this statement. Any Jew has an inheritor. If you die without children, you have brothers and sisters, or you have uncles. There's some relationship that whatever was in your estate on the physical level will find its way into the children of Israel in some way. There is some relative, however distant, who has the right to inherit the property. When he dies, his property is never up for grabs, since there is someone who has the legal right to inherit. In contrast, a convert does not have a Jewish family tree that goes back for generations. He might die and leave no inheritors, meaning no children, and there's no other relatives that are Jewish. So his estate, where is it going to go? In such a case, the rule is that his property is up for grabs. Whoever grabs the property of a convert who has died and left no inheritors merits to the property. Someone who's a convert to Judaism. When they die, if they have no children, then their property can be taken by any Jewish person. It is the same here with all these holy and high neshamot who are designated by the Blessed Holy One to go down below, as we explain. And according to the Ari, these are the ruachs and the neshamot that were blemished in a previous lifetime. They go out at specific times to play in the Garden of Eden, the lower one, and they meet the souls of converts. And they take hold of this soul of a convert, which is a nephesh, and it unites with it. It puts on that garment as the outer covering. And then it goes out through the holy seed into a body. Since their nephesh is completed, it is now time for them to be reincarnated. However, they cannot ensconce with their rectified nefesh because they are blemished. What do? They meet the souls of converts, grab hold of them, put them on as a garment, and within these garments they are born into the world. They exist within these garments, and they remain in the garden in these garments, because all those that are existing within the lower garden of Eden cannot exist there if they are not clothed with a nefesh. That's the verse 89. Now we're going to read verse 90. If you will say, because of these garments, these souls will be denied the ecstasy that was theirs from the first, perhaps this is talking about the original nefesh of the Ruach, the Neshama. This nefesh will have been cheated because it must now exist without a Ruach or a Neshama, which has gone off to join the nefesh of a Ger. Or perhaps it is talking about the Ruach itself that is ensconced within the nefesh of the Ger. The latter acts as an imposition, blocking out some of the ecstasy that was supposed to be absorbed by the Ruach and the Neshama. And the Saba answers, behold, it is written, if he takes another wife to himself, then he shall not deny her food, her raiment, and her qualitative time of intimacy. In the garden, he exists ensconced within this garment that he grabbed and merited. But when he goes up from there, he removes it because he does not need to exist there within a garment. Thus, when the Ruach Neshama goes up into the higher garden of paradise, he divests the garment. The interposition is removed and he is free to rejoin the original nefesh. Moreover, the nefesh of the Ger has gained an important benefit. It has been brought back into the higher paradise, although as a garment. But now that the Ruach has divested itself of its garment in the higher paradise, the nefesh of the Ger is there on its own and as an independent entity. The nefesh is the interface. The nefesh is called an animating soul because it animates the body. The next verse is verse 91 in the...
Can I ask a question?
Of course.
It's not exactly about what I'm talking about. When, in the beginning, when during the process of creation, creating of Adam, when it says that when the soul, the breath of life was entered Adam.
Right.
How many levels were there? All of them or?
All of them.
All of them?
Yeah, there are five levels in Adam originally.
This doesn't describe all of them.
Yeah. Well, it does. There's the Nefesh, the Ruach, the Neshama, the Chaya, and the Yechidah.
Yeah.
All of them were blown into Adam.
The breath of life.
The breath of life.
Yeah.
When he sinned, the Chaya and the Yechidah left. The Neshama was damaged, and it left. And the Ruach and the Nefesh fell. Verse 91 from the Mishpatim Zohar. The Saba began to cry as he had done before, and he said to himself, Old man, you certainly have reason to cry and pour out tears over every word that you are revealing. But it is known to the Blessed Holy One and the Holy Divine Presence that my heart is agreeable and I am speaking only in their service. They are the masters of all words and they are crowned by the words of Torah. The grandfather is revealing secrets that can be abused by the negative system, by people of the negative system, he has concern that what he's releasing, what he's revealing, would be used inappropriately. But since his consciousness is to serve Hashem, none of that will be used in a negative way. And that's a very great spiritual principle, that if your consciousness is to share, to give pleasure to the whole, to the Holy One, blessed be He, if that is your consciousness, then when you do an action, then that action can never be used by people in an inappropriate way. The problem is, people do actions without having that pure consciousness, and they fool themselves into thinking that they're doing it for others. They're doing it to serve God, but they're really, deeper down in their unconscious, they're doing it for selfish reasons. And this is part of what we have to realize and how we have to correct ourselves on the level of hatred for no reason. Now, verse 92 from the Mishpatim Zohar. All these holy souls come down into this world to inspire human beings and to take their places as is fitting for each one of them. When they come down, each one is clothed in those souls that we discussed, the souls of converts. And that is how they enter into the holy seed. The way the souls of convert who have been fallen into the klipot, been reincarnated for the purposes of attracting people to the klipot, to the negative system, and choosing, they really don't choose, they're just taken by the ruach and neshama to correct themselves. And then when that person dies, they go up into the lower Garden of Eden and then into the higher Garden of Eden, where they're taken off. The clothing is taken off, and that's how they return to the higher Garden of Eden. I hope it's becoming clear.
The clothing open out.
The outer garment is the clothing that the ruach wears is a nefesh.
Oh, nefesh, yes.
And the neshama wears a ruach. So to explain this, in other words, a ruach or a neshama is ensconced within the nefesh of a ger, and in that way it reincarnates into the holy seed, the children of Israel. It is within these garments that they are able to exist and to be affected by the things of this world. When these envelopes, the souls of the converts, draw desired things from this world, then the holy neshamot are nourished from the odors that they smell in these garments. It's describing a neshama has no ability to be in the physical world. It's too spiritual. But by being wearing the clothing, the nefesh, it can receive input from the physical world. That's what's being described in that verse, in that section.
The neshama cannot be in this world unless it has the garment?
Yes, that's correct.
That would make it more in the physical world?
The nefesh makes
yes.
It more. It's the interface between the spiritual and the physical. The neshama and the ruach can enter the world only when they are enveloped in a nefesh, which acts as their interface. They can only benefit from the world by the sense of smell. This they do through the interface of the nefesh, and if they cannot use their own nefesh, then they get to use the so-called nefesh of the convert, which is made available to them specifically for this purpose. You have known the nefesh of a ger. Verse 93 from the Zohar, Mishpatim. All the hidden things that the Blessed Holy One does, he has put into the Holy Torah. And everything is in the Torah. He reveals a hidden thing in the Torah, but he immediately clothes it in another garment and hides it. The wise who have many eyes are able to see a hidden thing within its garment, even though it is hidden there. They spot it when it is revealed, even though it may be hidden again within its covering immediately. And they don't lose sight of it again, despite its obscurity. Verse 94. In several places, the Blessed Holy One has already warned about converts that the people of the Holy Seed must be careful about them. The people of Israel must be careful about the converts in their midst, not to oppress them or treat them harshly in any way, and to go out of their way to make converts feel comfortable and at home as much as possible. The Talmud even says that the Torah has warned the Jewish people about this no less than 36 times in the Torah. In one of these places, it is written in the Torah, "Do not oppress a ger, for you have known the nefesh of a ger when you were strangers in the land of Egypt." The continuation of the Zohar emphasizes the need to understand this verse and the concept of nefesh of the ger in an esoteric way, and not according to its simple meaning. Verse 95. Having warned about the ger, the stranger, and the convert in all these places, he now takes the thing out of its covering and reveals it. This is what it says, "For you have known the nefesh of a ger," and then it is immediately hidden within the words, "when you were strangers in the land of Egypt." Strangers in the land of Egypt is an indication of the being in a body, because Egypt represents limitation and narrowness.
It says that ger aleger is convert or stranger.
Correct.
What about not a convert?
So someone who's born Jewish?
Wouldn't it be somebody who's not born Jewish?
Well, I don't know. You're confused.
Convert?
Convert means someone who is not born Jewish.
Right.
Who converts.
Or
a ger also means somebody I meet from the other 70 nations is a stranger.
I understand that.
You're talking about different levels of consciousness.
Okay.
You're not talking about physical people. In other words, the grandfather is insisting that we should not understand this verse according to its simple meaning, that since we were strangers in Egypt, therefore we had the ability to empathize with the convert in our midst. That may be true, but according to the Saba, the grandfather, the Torah is not giving over here a mere psychological ethic based on the historical experience of the collective. It wants us at this point to discount the words, "when you were strangers in the land of Egypt," which is a mere garment to the important message that you have known the nefesh of a ger. I disagree with the translator because I see it that it's important to realize that he's talking about being in a body, which is what Egypt represents, that narrowness where the soul feels confined, because it's not spiritual, it's material.
Egypt.
In Egypt, in a body.
Okay. So the Ram Jirla, like a stranger in the gear, so like Jews being in the, like in Egypt, the wrong body. So a gear is like a soul being in the wrong body. That's why they compare it.
Well, a nefesh of a ger is talking about a soul that has been grabbed by the ruach, the higher souls coming down from the higher Garden of Eden, grabbing this nefesh because he needs to come into the physical world, but he cannot come in with his own nefesh. He has to come in with this nefesh of Agar for the purpose, ultimately, to bring that nefesh of the Agar back up into the higher worlds.
Okay.
But he has to go through the process of being in the physical world,
uh-huh,
and then utilizing that nefesh of the Agar as a tool to do his correction, and then as payment, he brings him that Agar upstairs with him. Furthermore, the Saba reveals now that the esoteric meaning of the verse is talking about the relationship of the Neshama and the Ruach to the Nefesh of the Ger. It is through this Nefesh of the Ger that the Neshama knows the things of this world and is able to benefit from them. In other words, it is through the Nefesh of the Ger that all the blemished Neshamot and Ruach can enter into the world. That is the main point. The Nefesh of the Ger is the interface, the mechanism by which blemished Ruchot and Neshamot know the world and benefit from it. The Zohar will now further clarify the point by comparing it to the cloud that is mentioned in the verse, and Moshe went into the midst of the cloud, and he went up to the mountain, which is when Moses was bringing down the Yeser Dibrot. Right. Verse 96. The Saba began and said, and Moshe went into the midst of the cloud, and he went up to the mountain. What is this cloud? This is what is written. I have put my bow in the cloud. This bow sent forth the garment, the cloud, which was given to Moshe. With this garment, he was able to go up to the mountain, and through it, he was able to see what he saw and benefit from what was there. In other words, the cloud was the interface between Moshe and what was being revealed on Mount Sinai. At this point, the members of the fellowship that were present, Rabbi Yose and Rabbi Shia, prostrated themselves before the Saba. They cried and they said, if we have come into the world only to hear these words from your mouth, then it would have been enough. That is the end of section 11. It's also the end of chapter 1, which we'll find out next week because we're a little over time now, but we started a little late. So, are there questions? On the conference call, are there questions?
No, this helped a lot.
I'm glad. I know we had a lot of issues last week, so
I'm glad.
That's why I wanted to take the time to help clarify it.
Yeah, I'm glad you did. Thank you.
You're welcome.
It would have been enough just to be there.
Just to hear this is enough. Just to hear this secret. This understanding of the Nefesh of the Ger, to understand whenever you read the 36 times in the Torah, the Ger, the orphan, the widow, and the and the convert, don't abuse them, to realize that it's not just talking about ethics and morals, it's talking about reincarnation.
The widow, the orphan and the convert to Judaism?
The convert to Judaism, but it's also the convert from the negative system to the positive system.
Okay.
It's a little confusing still. It'll become clear as we go on.
Empathy,
absolutely. Most of the world knows sympathy.
Yes.
They strive to be sympathetic.
Yes.
But the real goal is to be empathetic.
Right.
My grandson was allowed to stay up for the election. But my daughter was explaining to him the purpose or this discussion of the Electoral College. And he said, why is it called a college? Which is a reasonable question from a 10-year-old, 9-year-old. And so they called me to answer this question. And so I explained that you have to go back into the history of the word, which comes from the Greek and really means a group of people making a decision.
College?
College, yes. But that's what I told him, but then I took it a step further and I said, you need to go home and Google the meaning of the word college, and from now on you can never accept the modern meaning of words. You have to delve into their history. Because otherwise you're going to make mistakes. Because words change over time in societies.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, what culture are you in? If you're a member of the mafia, they will say, get out of here. And they mean that in a good way sometimes. And sometimes, you know, or forget about it. I was listening to one of the movies today about Goodfellas. Forget about it. And he was explaining that sometimes it means you're going to get killed, and the other times it means, you know, literally don't worry about it. So you have to understand the meaning of words.
Yes.
It's really important. Any other questions on the conference call?
No, thank you.
Thank you.
You all have a good week. And I remind you just simply, tonight at 7 o'clock West Coast times will be a Zohar class. Saturday night at 6 p.m. will be a Havdalah. And at 7 p.m. a Zohar class. And at 10:30 Sunday, there will be we'll continue with class 3 in Why Study Zohar. And at 2 o'clock West Coast time, we will have class number 3 in the basic classes going into the Hebrew letters and Hebrew words and the Anabakoach. And the rest of the week we'll discuss on Sunday, but we'll be doing our normal schedule next week. I also want to remind you that this Shabbat is the 11th of Cheshvan, which is the Hilulah for Rachel Imenu. And because it's on Shabbat, we're not doing our nightly our all-night study, but I'm reminding you to learn as much as you can about the Torah that relates to and discusses Rachel and the traits of Rachel, as well as the 11th of Cheshvan is the Hilulav of Methuselah Methuselah ben Hanoch. So I recommend you learn about him as well because he's the longest living human being.
Oh.
And also the birth date of Benjamin ben Jacob, because Rachel died in childbirth on the 11th while giving birth to Benjamin, who is the only one of the 12 tribes who was born in the land of Israel. A lot of interesting energy in the 11th day.
When is that?
Saturday. Friday night and Saturday.
And Sunday.
Uh-huh.
What does that mean?
Well, it's off. The full moon won't really take place for 4 more days till next Wednesday. But the You may see a physical new moon on Sunday.
What if this full moon is going to be like close to the Earth in like
Right. But again, you're looking at a physical new moon. The spiritual one will be on the 15th, which is Wednesday. Good night, all. I hope you have a beautiful evening, and shalom to all.
Okay, thank you. Good night.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.